time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 4th of July, 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, and it's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Oceanview Road, Onirua. I'm Chris Walker, and on Saturday, the 4th of July, I spoke with the incoming president of Waiheke Rotary, Sharon L. Bakari. Then I spoke with bass player of the Waratahs, Nick Theobald, and was then joined for a solo spot from opinionated Islander Alex Stone. Good morning, it's Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, and we're taking a look at Waiheke people, events and issues, and we have a new chair of Waiheke Rotary picking up the reins, and well, probably quite literally when it comes to the beach races, and we'll find out more about what they've got in store. We've got Sharon L. Bakari in the studio. How are you, Sharon?
I'm great, thank you, Chris.
Excellent. So you've picked up, picked up the mantle of leadership.
The presidency, yeah.
The presidency of Waiheke Rotary. So is that a big job?
Well, it's quite complicated. If you want to do it well, and I like doing things well, so it's got lots of facets to it, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I kind of think of Rotary and I think of people, I don't know, getting together and having a big nosh-up dinner every once in a while and perhaps, listen to someone come along and give them a speech and then maybe a few kind of congratulatory pats on the back and away they go?
Well, it's sort of not really like that. We meet once a week at the Surfdale Bowling Club and we have a nice simple meal. And every time we get together, every single thing is paid for by all of us. So we sometimes do have a nice meal with lots of lovely, you know, like we did on Sunday at the Oyster Inn. But, of course, not one cent is ever paid for from Rotary because we get together every week to try and think of ways that we can raise money for our community, to do good in the community, to do really good things to make our community a much better place to live in. And that's why we all join. It's service, a community service.
So people often bemoan that in the modern age, you know, civil engagement and those concepts of service are dropping away. Are you finding that's the experience?
Yes, we do find it that particularly a lot of the people who started Rotary 15 years ago are now 15 years older and don't have the energy, so we're trying hard to bring in new blood. Obviously, young professional business people have got families, and it's time that's hard to get them to commit to, but we can get around that. I mean, we do have fantastic members, and at the moment we've got 44 members, which is pretty good, and we punch well above our weight.
Yeah, you run some pretty significant events,
yep,
don't you?
We do.
You've got obviously the beach races is the one that most people know.
That's our iconic event that we've been running for years. It's over 100 years it's been going, but Rotary's been running it now for over 15 years since we started Rotary, and that brings in the major income for us for the year. And then we have our King of the Bay fishing competition. We've got Opera on the Gulf, which we started this year, and we hope to continue that one going, which was really fantastic at the Tony Pope's and Sandra's house. And we have Wharf to Wharf, which is run by the Dolphins and Rotary. And so, you know, with all of those events, I mean, this past year, while Greg Davenport was president, we've actually given out $48,000 to our community.
Wow.
Well, it's also international as well.
Yeah, but that, you know, those are a large number of events for 44 people to organise.
It is. And to get $48,000 that we've managed to distribute amongst 44 people means that we work very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to, I mean, you know, you run those events and that's how you're raising your money. And also, I suppose, the other thing, isn't it, that they're also, it's enhancing the community because those events are things that people participate in and, as you say, they're iconic and they kind of define the island in many ways.
They do, yes. Actually, we had a great write-up in Rotary Down Under, the Australian magazine, with photos from the beach races. I wrote an article and they printed the whole thing, which was quite good. But it's a matter of actually what my goal is branding. Because when I first started in Rotary about 7 years ago, and I would go to all the businesses trying to get them to donate for the silent auction, because I was running that, just about everyone I'd ask if they would give us something, they'd say, well, what does Rotary do and where do they spend the money? We never hear anything about Rotary. And so what I'm trying to do is every time we're giving out the check or handing over the car keys to the, like with the Friends of the Street, we gave them $6,000. Every time we're doing something, I try very hard to get it in our local papers, and sometimes they print them, sometimes they don't, but Marketplace have always been marvellous. They print the articles, and so then people are seeing, gosh, we've given over $8,000 to youth on the island for education. And that's huge. And then, of course, you've always also got the Christmas parcels, the money we give out to the underprivileged at Christmas time. And there's so many things that we do. But we gave over $8,000 for international aid for polio eradication and Vanuatu and lots of other things like that.
So the money that you raise is going back, you know, predominantly into the community. How do you make the decisions about how to distribute it?
We have a board meeting once a month, and fortunately this year my treasurer and my secretary have been on the board for a few years and know history, which is good. We've got also new people in the who've joined Rotary who've come from other Rotary clubs, and I've pulled them in nice and quickly to use their expertise. And we have a meeting once a month where everything that people are wanting, an application for a grant, gets put before the board, and we look at how much money we've got, what do we think is relevant, is it going to improve the community. You know, it's a delicate line. Obviously, if people are trying to promote themselves and businesses, well, we try very hard not to get up, buy into that. And we're non-political, non-religious, just trying to look across the whole community.
Do you get lobbied pretty hard for grants?
We get asked.
Yeah. That's all right, though, isn't it?
That's fine. Yeah. I had a meeting last night at home for over an hour with a couple of people who were giving me their personal opinion of what they wanted, and I always listen with an open mind, and then the board decides.
So you're focusing on increasing that awareness and the branding. And you'll keep those, you know, keep those same events going and trying to cement the opera one into place.
Absolutely.
So any other ambitions? Is it a year that you have or 2 years?
Just 1 year, thank goodness. it's a whole new board and a whole new presidency, and every year it all changes. The same going right to the very top. Our international Rotary president, Ravi, he's from Sri Lanka. He's taken over. Every year there's a new logo, and this year the logo is Let You Be a Gift to the World. Last year it was Light Up Rotary, and so every time you see anything about Rotary, you'll see the logo. And this year, Let You Be a Gift to the World, and it just means every single person has got something to offer, and it's really good.
And, you know, you've got your 44 members. Is that just a matter of someone going, oh, yeah, I want to do that, or is it a little bit more
It's a
selective?
Bit more to it, yes. Yep. Well, what happens is they get asked to come to a couple of meetings and, first of all, see if they like it. The members actually select people they think would be appropriate, because you have to have a good standing in the community. You're representing Rotary, so you don't want people who are not financially stable who are going to let you down in the community or things like that.
No riffraff.
But it doesn't matter what jobs they do.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not at all conscious of being class conscious. It's actually people who really want to give in the community and do good things.
Yeah.
And that's my logo this year, doing good for the community. That's my logo. That's what, because it's short and sweet, and that's what we do.
Excellent. Oh, well, good luck with your presidency.
Thank you.
So what's next on the calendar for Rotary?
Well, the next big thing, of course, that we'll all be working towards is preparing for the Onitangi Beach races, and that's on the 21st of February next year. But the Wharf to Wharf happens before that, but that's sort of not so much. We're all Rotarians are stewards going right through the course from right out at Oropu all the way into Matiatia. So we all have our jobs, but we've done it every year. It's not a big deal. It's the Onitangi Beach races takes a huge amount of organisation. And that's the big one coming up.
Excellent.
Linda Marinkus has always, she's been running it for 5 years. She's running it again this year. She's on chairman of the committee, so I'm really thrilled about that.
Well, it sounds like you're busy, Sharon, so we better let you get to it.
Thank you,
Sharon Albakari, the new president of Waiheke Rotary.
Waiheke Radio.
This is Island Life on Waiheke Radio, your weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. And it's a real pleasure to have in the studio local musician Nick Theobald, who is the bass player for the Waratahs. And the Waratahs, of course, an iconic band who have got a history of nearly 30 years. They'll be well known, perhaps for some of their earlier songs like Maureen and Hand on My Heart, and of course that Inter-Islander ad. But the band's still going strong. And they've just released a new album called Runaway Days. And to my ears, actually, I think it's one of the strongest Waratahs albums I've heard. It's absolutely fantastic. So it's a real pleasure to have you here this morning, Nick. How are you?
Thanks, Chris. I'm good, thank you. Yep.
Yeah, we'll just pull you in a little bit closer to the mic there, please, Nick.
Cool, no problem.
Excellent. So Runaway Days, it is a really, really strong album. How did it come about?
Some songs of Barry's that were already existing. Barry Saunders writes the songs. He's the singer and the guitarist. We went into a wonderful little studio in Devonport in Auckland called The Depot. It's run by a fantastic engineer called David Rhodes, who's the son of one of the original members in the Hamilton County Bluegrass Band. And we just went in there and Barry said, okay, here's 8 new songs that we'd never heard. And we just put our heads down and went for it, basically. So there's a lot of misinformation going around about how long it actually took to make, but it didn't take one day, it took 2.25 days. So.
Well, 2.25
clear
days
that up.
Is still extraordinary, because, I mean, one of the things in listening to this album, I think I was blown away by the production and you know, the recording of it. It sounds fantastic. And, you know, 2.5 days isn't long. I mean, there's some pretty kind of complicated arrangements to some of these songs. You know, it's not just 4 guys, you know, drum, bass, guitar, is it?
Well, for all the trains, the train spotters out there, the studio at the depot in Devonport at the time was only one room. So we were all in one room. With a couple of baffles around the drums, so there was leakage from the drums going into the live mics, particularly Barry's one. But we managed to clean all those up in at Monkey Studios in Wellington. So we did a little bit of post production. So really, there's about, I would say, probably about four and a half days of total studio time involved. And that's the way to do it. If you talk to certain people, they'll just say, look, put your heads down and go for it. You can polish something for months and months and months, and then it just, you know, are you any better off? And you've spent a lot of money.
Yeah, and this is the first Waratahs new recordings for a while, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say, from off the top of my head, because I've only been in the band for 4 years, it's probably the first one for, I think, 10 years at least.
Yeah. Well, we might take a listen to something to give people a taster. This is the title track from the album Runaway Days.
trip ahead of the runaway days.
That's Runaway Days, the title track from the new Waratahs album, and I've got the bass player on that track and on that album, Nick Theobald, in the station with me now. So we were just talking while that was playing, Nick, about the, you know, the sound of the band. I mean, you could, maybe on initial listen, people might go, oh, you know, it's a country album, but there's a lot more going on than that, isn't there?
I think so. If you look at the charts of last week, I'm not sure what they're doing this week. I think they came out yesterday. We were I'm not skiting here or anything. We were number 8 on the New Zealand chart and number 4 on the country chart. So, but it's not really a country band. It's a bit hard to pin us down into a category now, really.
So you've been in the band for 4 years.
4 years, yes.
Yeah, but you've got a musical history with the songwriter Barry Saunders that goes back a long, long time, haven't you?
And our drummer Michael Knapp at the moment, Snapper Knapp at the moment too. We've got we go back to the late 70s in Wellington,
yep,
where we had a band called the Tigers that played around New Zealand a wee bit, went to Australia, got a deal with EMI Australia, stayed in Sydney for a couple of years, got a bit too tough, but we enjoyed it. We did our best and everything, and we were the last of what they were calling the Kiwi Wave in those days.
It does sound, from what I've read, that kind of touring circuit and playing in Australia at that time was pretty tough on bands.
Yeah, you need to be made of pretty stern stuff, and also you needed to make good music. That's the main thing. Yeah.
And so you were playing the big clubs and stuff there, were you?
We were playing all sorts of things. We started out supporting just about everybody there was in Australia, and ended up doing a little Australian tour with Eric Burdon before we decided to pack it in.
Yeah. Hmm. So you might not like this, but we'll just stick on. You might need to stick some headphones on to hear this, Nick, but managed to dig up a recording of the Tigers, Red Dress. You wrote this one, didn't you?
Yeah.
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 So you still writing now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the Waratahs, are other people bringing songs in there, or is that all?
No, Barry? That's the songs are Barry. It's Barry's band for songwriting, and that's the way it's always been, and that's good. Although when Wayne Mason was in the band, there were a couple of Wayne's songs in the lineup as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Band's had some pretty amazing members in it, actually.
Yeah. 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 Let's just bring this up for a sec. So who's that on vocals on that track?
Barry.
Barry, yeah. The voice has changed a lot over the years.
Yeah, we were young and thinner in those days.
Yeah,
younger and thinner.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that song had a notorious cover.
It did have a notorious cover, yeah. We better not go there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, between the Tigers and the Waratahs, a long time between drinks. Presumably you've been had other musical projects along the way.
I dropped out for 20 years.
Mm. Yeah,
chewed us up and spat us all out in Australia, really.
Yeah,
and I'd had enough. So 20 years, I just played my guitar at home and serenaded my wife at the time. And then when I came back to the island, which was at the end of 2003, I teamed up with Steve Robinson and Mark Robinson, and we play. They've got the band called the Red Herrings here, so I'm in that as well.
Yeah. Mm. So it wasn't a matter of having to relearn your instrument.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So you when you get out on the road with the Waratahs, what kind of reception are you getting?
We get a great reception, actually. That's part of the band is really part of the heartland. We've got people in their 20s and people in their 60s come and see us. It's quite spectacular, really. We did a big tour recently with the great band from Christchurch called The Eastern, and a lovely singer from the West Coast called Katie Thompson. And we've, because they're a bit younger than us, we had that help to bring in the young crowd, okay? But it's still pretty much a heartland crowd, sort of. I suppose the average age would be probably about sort of late 40s or sort of early 50s, something like that.
There does seem to be a bit of a groundswell for that type of music, doesn't there? I mean, you've mentioned the Eastern, but you've got people like Marlon Williams, you know, yeah. Tammy Nielsen, Delaney Davidson, and they do seem to, a kind of a hip young crowd going to see kind of roots or country influenced, Americana influenced music. So.
Yeah, it's good if you're skinny and have got a beard too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, isn't that you?
Not at the moment, no.
So it must be quite nice to be reaching that audience as well.
Oh, it's just great, you know, it's great. It's great to, it's so good to have a good album in the can, and we've got a few dates coming up. An Auckland date, if I'm allowed to mention that.
Yeah, go for it.
We're doing one date to showcase the album with a great band called Swamp Thing. I've only seen one of their clips, but they look like the real deal. So we're doing a double header at the Tuning Fork on Friday, August the 7th.
Good stuff. And so that on the back of the album, you're doing that tour. You know, the Waratahs, is an ongoing concern, or is it something that just kind of pops up every once in a while when Barry gets the...
No, it's an ongoing concern. It's expensive to go on the road these days. That's part of the problem, which is, I mean, it's really always been part of the problem, but it's quite pricey now. You have to be careful where you go. You don't want to lose money, that's for sure, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, we're going to listen to another track off the album now.
Cool.
This one's Little Flame. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this one?
It's one of the guys in the band. We love this. We all love this song. It's about Barry's wonderful daughter, Sarah, and I think it was written quite a while ago, and it kind of speaks for itself, really.
All right, let's take a listen.
Come early. Hello.
Little Flame from the new Waratahs album Runaway Days. So that was one of the new ones that Barry brought into the session, wasn't it, Nick?
Yes, we hadn't heard that yet, although it was a song written about Sarah, his daughter, a while ago, that just sort of was in hibernation, really, and then came out scratching its fur and thought, oh, I'm going to need to be released to the world.
So when he comes in, he brings in, what, the lyrics, and then you're building the track around it?
Or brings in the... plays us the song, which is lyrically finished, yep. Okay, and plays us the song on acoustic guitar, and then heads down and let's go.
Yeah. So how does the band kind of pull together something which sounds like that from that starting point?
It's like making a very simple sandwich. Really, you need a good backing track. Is there a place for Nick Brown to play? Is Nick going to play fiddle or play mandolin on it? But that's usually done afterwards, so that'll be a drop in. Okay, but the basic thing is rhythm guitar, bass, and drums, and then we go from there.
Yeah.
And often, not a hell of a lot of stuff has been actually added onto it in post production.
Yeah, but throughout the album, as you say, there's those little flourishes, aren't there, from either the fiddle or the harmonica or Is there a Leslie organ in there somewhere?
There is. There's a Hammond in there. Organ, Hammond with a Leslie cabinet.
Yeah,
yeah, and done by Alan Norman, who used to be in the band. And also a little bit of guitar as well. Yeah, that's about it, basically.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, you were saying before, that the music industry can be pretty tough, and, as you said, it's going to chew you up and spat you out in the early 80s. So now with a few more years under your belt, and, what's it like being kind of back into that lifestyle?
In my case, rescued from musical obscurity in middle age is quite good, actually. I think just take it; it's good.
Yeah.
It's still tough. There's a lot of bands playing in New Zealand. It's a very busy country musically, and also you'll find if you're thinking about, say, we'll do something down in Gore or Arrowtown or something like that. Let's book the hall. Well, 4 months in advance. Sorry, mate, the hall's already booked. It's very very strange at the moment. Yeah. Big music scene here.
And have you been tempted to kind of get back into, something, a more kind of prominent project around your own songs?
Oh, that always hangs around, but that's a work in progress, actually.
Yeah,
definitely, yeah.
So we'll keep our eyes peeled for that one.
Well, let's hope so, yeah.
Yeah, so what's the date of that Tuning Fork show again?
Friday, 7th of August.
Yeah, that's a nice handy one for people on the island to pop along there.
Yeah, that'd be good, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Oh, thanks very much, Nick, for coming in this morning.
Pleasure, Chris. Thanks very much for having us.
I think it's a great album. I'm really impressed with it. We'll be sticking a few of those tracks in the playlist for sure.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, good stuff. You're on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. I've been talking to Nick Theobald from the Waratahs about their new album, Runaway Days.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Their opinionated islander, Alex Stone. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, I'm well. He's sitting here thinking about what the crisis at the brewery is.
Yeah, flying solo today. Alan called back to an emergency at the brewery. Maybe someone needed their pint topped up.
Well, if it's the next shipment of beer that needs to be sorted, I'd say there are priorities in this world. So if the local brewer has to go make sure the next shipment of beer is okay, that's top priority.
Yeah, absolutely. That's much more important than sitting here talking rubbish, isn't it? Yes.
But when you think about it, blokes sitting around shooting the breeze, talking rubbish, it's like it's an ancient tradition.
It is.
It's something that it's almost like the cornerstone of our civilization. All good things come out of what started off as being kind of talking crap at some stage, you know?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Whether it's sitting around a bar with a pint or, you know, sitting around a wooden bowl full of carver. I mean, it's something that kind of happens around the world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, speaking of the impossible, you know, imagining the impossible while you're talking, did you get the news this morning about solar impulse?
No.
Extraordinary news. This aeroplane, powered only by solar panels, left Japan 5 days ago, and it landed in Hawaii this morning at dawn. And it's been flying for 5 days, 8,000 kilometers. And on two occasions through the night, it had to go around in circles because it charges up its batteries during the day with the solar panels and then runs on the batteries through the night. But they've got to make sure that when the dawn breaks, they've got sunrise. And on two occasions, there's going to be a cold front. So they had to go around in circles so that when the dawn broke, they were still in clear skies. And there they made it. They made it to Hawaii. They landed this morning. It's actually quite moving. You can look at it on their website. There's a picture of the plane coming in to land. It's an extraordinarily beautiful plane. And the idea of this thing being able to stay up endlessly. One of the funny things was that it's so delicate, this plane, it can only land in 10 knots of wind and no more than 4 knots of crosswind. So one of the possibilities, they could have got to Hawaii and had to keep on
just
flying.
Just been stuck,
Keep going around in circles till the breeze died on the ground. Yeah. But they got down at dawn.
So do they follow the sun? I mean, do they around the world? Or
Well, they're trying to keep away from weather systems. But the pattern during the day is as soon as the sun is heating up the solar panels on the wings, the engines are running directly off the solar panel, and they're also charging the batteries at the same time. And the plane climbs to its maximum altitude of about 28,000 feet. And then during the night, they're working on only batteries and going downhill. So by the time it's dawn, they're back at about 8,000 feet, hoping like hell the sun rises so the batteries can get charged again.
Jeez, it'd be a tense job for the pilot, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you imagine? Yeah. But anyway, he's having a shower and a steak in Hawaii as we speak.
Good on him. Fair
enough. Hopefully a beer.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice if it was a Baruna beer.
It would be. A long way to go for that, though. Well, maybe they can head over here next.
Yeah. So we've got things to talk about. What do we talk about this month?
You know, I mean, one of the things I've been wondering about, because you fancy yourself as a bit of an artist.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else does, but you certainly fancy yourself.
Well, it's one of the things about this island. It accepts people who want to call themselves artists.
Yeah.
I once wrote a short story about it, and it's kind of cool. The island accepts you, and you say you're an artist, and there are literally hundreds on this island who say so, and the island accepts that.
It's one of the few self-appointed occupations, isn't it? I mean, you know, you can't just call yourself a doctor and get away with it.
You can't
call yourself you could probably call yourself a politician and get away with it, but, you can't call yourself, I'm a bus driver, but with an artist, you can.
Yeah. Well, politicians and
artists despite any evidence to the contrary.
Politicians are bullshit artists, and I was quite impressed with the way the idea of a politician and an artist overlapped with the story of Colin Craig. I think the world needs to see his anthology of poetry.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? The irony for me was that we're now faced with a situation where Colin Craig, who we all think is the laughing stock, is actually a more honourable man than our Prime Minister. Because when Colin Craig did something inappropriate, and as far as we can tell, it was writing dweeby poetry, he resigned. He's kaput. When our Prime Minister did something inappropriate that's actually an offence and admitted to it, he's still going strong. So there you go.
That was interesting to see yesterday, and I know we talked about this a lot at the time, the media coverage, and the Press Council found that against the Herald around their reporting of that story.
Yeah, did you notice the Herald ran it on their front page?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, but you wanted to talk about art.
Well, one of the things that's going on at the moment and seems to be kind of coming to the pointy end of things is this proposal around developing flag ideas. And I thought, well, you're an artist, and you're one who's kind of often kind of giving thought to how we express our identity. What have been your thoughts on this whole flag proposal?
Well, I think personally, a new flag would be great, and I think a new flag that reflects the status of this nation as an island in the Pacific would be great. But I think we've gone about this project all the wrong way. You know, the way the project's kind of been branded as John Key's pet project, his legacy project, Not so sure about that. And this group of people that are supposedly the visibles of New Zealand fronting this great event, when you look at the public turnout at the meetings through the country, it's been an absolute joke. And then the idea of having no referendum, do we want the new flag in the first place, could have saved us a lot of money. So there's a lot about the actual process of the flag debate that I think is crook. But I think the idea of an interesting new flag is a great one. Yeah. But I think let's be a bit braver in what the flag will look like, you know?
I wonder, though, I mean, that, you know, a lot of the opposition that's coming to the, you know, to the flag project is coming from people who say, oh, you know, the money should be better spent on other things, you know, yeah, child poverty and whatever. But it was never going to be spent on that.
No.
And it does seem that almost that the strongest opposition to the flag project is coming from the people who in other circumstances you would think would be the strongest proponents for a change.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Well, they're kind of distinct demographic cubbyholes in the opposition. You know, the RSA opposition is quite distinctly different to the far left-wing opposition, as you say, the people who'd rather spend money on child poverty. And I think the thing that might be the most difficult is to find a single unifying symbol, given that New Zealand is such a divided society now. And the one thing that does seem to be a constant is the color black. And a black flag, I'm not so sure. And a black flag with a bit of white on it, like a fern, looks very similar to the IS flag, which is black with a bit of white sort of motif on it. A black flag doesn't work for me. And in artistic terms, I don't think it works either. Yeah,
there's not many. I suppose there are a few flags that have black in them, aren't there? But not
the African and African and West Indian flags have a bit of black in.
Yeah,
but never a predominantly black flag. No.
Perhaps a silhouette of a helicopter flying through the sunset.
I'm not with you. What's the helicopter signify?
Well, you know, that we've got the Cable Bay. Yeah.
That'll be the flag of Cable Bay.
Yeah,
it's quite an interesting one. You know, the silver fern, everyone thinks of it as being such a unifying symbol. But I also think this country could eventually grow out of rugby. You know, rugby is not a beautiful game. And it's also a dangerous game, and it's an ugly game in the way it destroys young athletes. And for me, the dark side of rugby is the way women's refuge is overrun with emergency cases every time the All Blacks lose. There is a dark side to rugby. It's very closely linked to domestic violence. The whole, there's a violent culture around rugby. So I think for our national symbol to be tied to that forever is an interesting one. And it's not the Silver Fern's fault, but it has become the logo of the All Blacks. And I think New Zealand as a nation is bigger than the All Blacks. And I also believe we will grow out of rugby. So that might not be the symbol we're looking for. I think the koru, the unfolding koru, is a good one. And if you go back, there's a unique flag, the one, the Huntervasa flag. It's beautiful, it's unique, it's completely distinctive in the world. It does have a single panel of black. And, you know, that's the alternative flag we should be looking at. But if you look at the way the whole process is working now, nobody's taking that one seriously.
A lot of the options are derived from that, koru, from that,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But but the idea of a koru in red, white, and blue doesn't work. You know, there's certain things that spark in visual language. In any kind of language, in any idiom, in any language, your connections have to have integrity. And the idea of a koru in red, white, and blue doesn't have integrity in terms of visual language, whereas the Huntavasa Kuru in that earthy green colour worked perfectly. Yeah.
So have you been tempted to knock up a submission?
No, I haven't. I have in the past. I've sort of played with New Zealand flag designs, but not this time. No, but because I think it's, I think the whole, in visual terms, in terms of visual language again, the whole thing is just descended into kind of naffness. You know, a lot of the proposed designs are actually quite naff and not bold or exciting at all, you know.
So you're predicting it'll stay the same?
I'm not sure. Well, you know, all the polls have been saying so far that the majority don't want change, which I think is disappointing. You know, we could, you know, change would be nice, but yeah, it might stay the same, unfortunately. The other thing to consider, if the Aussie flag and the New Zealand flags are too similar, the Aussies should change theirs, because we had ours 2 years before theirs. If you go back in history, our flag was there before the Aussie flag, because they took a bit longer to become a federation and whatever. It's just one of those historical quirks. So maybe if you want to go down that route, the Aussies should change their flag. Well, and they've got a very interesting alternative Huntavasa flag as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe we should start submitting some proposals for them.
Yeah. You know? The Huntavasa one is terrific. It's like a Uluru shape upside down. A little bit like the Indigenous Australian banner that they have at the moment. But speaking of Indigenous banners, our Tino Rangatiratanga flag, that in visual language terms works a treat. That's very, very strong. And that's the one we could go for. Why not?
Yeah.
So my two votes would be the Huntavasa one and the Tino Rangatiratanga one. All these people coming up with their new designs now are basically naff. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Mm. Well, there you go. There's the art critic giving his opinion.
And I didn't use any big words, did I?
No, not at all. All right. So you've got a big week coming up. I think we'll probably have you back next week because, of course, we've got the results of the survey on the Marine Reserve.
Yeah.
Yes, being released, and the meeting, the local board meeting on that is on Thursday.
Shifted to
Ostend War Memorial Hall to fit more people in. I think they're expecting a lot of interest.
Well, I hope so. I think this is a pivotal moment. This is the moment when we can rise to some kind of greatness, some kind of future vision. And yeah, I think this is going to be a great moment. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm thinking there's great positive stuff to come out of it. Yeah.
Okay. So so thank you very much, Alex, for joining us this morning.
And we should maybe just close off with sending our thoughts to the brewer who's up to his arms in frothing yeast or something.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Bless him.
Alex will be back next month with Alan here on the first Saturday of the month on Island Life. And if you want to know more about those marine survey results, they will be available on Monday. You can go onto the Auckland Council website, look for the Waiheke Local Board agenda, and the results will be available there, and from Monday, and then the meeting is on the 9th. That's at it's later, isn't it? 6 p.m. at the War Memorial Hall on the 9th to discuss the results of that survey. So there'll be a lot of people on both sides of that debate keenly interested in what happens.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.